Everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined tonight following an exciting Bucks and Raptors game that went down to the wire. Thank you very much. I know it's one of the wilder times and one of your favorite times of the year. Matt Moore of the Action Network is hopping on. Everybody's favorite guest on here. Matt, how are you holding up?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
You know,
I'm sorry. Let me start over. Hey man, I'm well. Hope you're hanging in there.
By a string. Actually, the way that Harrison and I finished our show last was us saying that you have to laugh your way through this, otherwise you're going to go completely bonkers. So that's where we're at right now. That's the portion of the season that we're at, or the off season that we're at.
Can I ask you something? Just because you interact with them more than I do, especially when I'm focused on the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So is the fan base as a whole, which is hard because it's so large, like Darius always makes this point to me, and he's right, that it's like it's so large you can't, but like as a whole, is there still like a feeling of like, well, okay, this isn't great, but you know what, we're still the Lakers and I'd rather be the Lakers than anybody else? Or is it kind of like more of a like, no, we're really in trouble, this is really bad?
I think at this point, I've been doing this long enough, and I think Darius, one of the points that he makes is that, like, he's been doing this long enough to where the people who follow him are going to be the more level-headed people, right? Sure. Or the more realistic people. And I'm borderline nihilistic in my coverage of the Lakers, right? So I think I can only speak to the people who interact with me most often, and I think they're at a point now where they're saying, no, this is not great. This is as soon as the ownership of the Lakers came into question, that's where I think the everything switched.
Yeah.
Right. And you know what? That's really set up the foundation of the concerns moving forward with these. Like, no matter how this offseason goes, they could still make this. They could work this stuff out. Kawhi Leonard decides, just like LeBron did, that the off-court stuff or living in LA or just being a Laker is more valuable than all the nonsense that comes with it, then and their problems can be solved with one fell swoop. But the underlying issues are still there. We don't need to get in. So today's show, by the way, we are going to talk about whether or not actually this all of this matters, all of the nonsense and stuff like that matters with free agents and stuff like that. Matt wrote a really good article for the Action Network, kind of touching on that and Lakers exceptionalism, whether or not we're witnessing the death of it and all that good stuff. One of the reasons why I bring you on here is because you offer a league-wide perception. We get to zoom out a little bit and see what other teams or other people around the league are talking about as it pertains to the Lakers. And then finally, you know, we opened up with a kind of looking back really quickly on a fun Bucks and Raptors game, and the playoffs overall have been really exciting. I kind of want to know how the Lakers would have done here, and I think the audience would be interested in that. So shouts to Himalaya. If you're looking for a place to listen to a podcast and you're looking for a brand new platform, check out Himalaya. It's spelled just like the mountain range. It's a really cool app. I started using it myself, and I don't know why I haven't been using it yet. So anywho, let's dive into this, though. Does it matter? Like, one of the things here is, are any of the most public problems with the Lakers, are any of the things that people are talking about most right now, are those things anywhere near the top of the list that an impending free agent would care about? Like, does a free agent care that Magic Johnson is associated with the Lakers anymore?
No, I don't. I don't think any of them really care. I would have bet that most of them haven't been paying attention. They are very keen on what is said about them. They will say, like, I don't read anything, and that's a lie. Yeah. I don't pay attention to any of this. That's a lie.
Yeah.
I don't know what these people say about me. That's a lie.
We've gotten too many DMs to say that that's not the case.
Well, and like, that's part of those. Like, it's one of the reasons I respect KD, because KD at least is honest about it. Yeah. KD's like, no, yeah, I pay attention to it. Screw you. You're wrong. Like, I'm willing to call you out. I'm not going to let you slide on it. And I don't agree with his. I think it's like, dude, come on. You really should have better things to do. But like, most of them do pay attention. And so I don't think that most of them, however, pay attention to like stuff that's not going on with them, because their lives are very big. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Like, they have lots of money and lots of influence and lots of like relationships to manage, not just like not romantic ones, just like life relationships. Like, these are very big, powerful people because they make a lot of money because they're professional athletes. And so like they have entire kind of universes that go around them. And LeBron's has always been like the largest. I think if something was going on, it's one of the reasons that it's been good that LeBron has managed to keep the power struggle as under the radar as he has. Like the fact that LeBron, like, to me, there are all these like warning signs that pop up. And I was mentioned this the other day about how like I was like, I don't know that this has been talked about. And you were like, we've talked about it a lot. I think outside of these specific circles with Lakers fans, it hasn't permeated the national discussion that like there's a little bit of power struggle going on with LeBron. Like, that's just not something that's gotten out there. I think it's shocking because like after the Anthony Davis thing, I was like, who's running the Lakers? Yeah. Like, is Rich Paul running the Lakers? Because it looks like Rich Paul's running the Lakers, and nobody else has gone there. And I don't know that anybody will. Nobody will go there, because the only people that would be able to say that are people that cannot burn their sources.
Yeah,
say that.
I was going to bring this up. Like, who could offer actual context on this without burning their bridge to that context?
So. I don't think that it really matters, because like if it was LeBron, it would. But now it's just like, OK, well, you know, because honestly, I just think that a lot of times the players are just like the free agent or the general managers and the owners are all kind of the same and all kind of disposable. Mm-hmm. Like, they may have specific relationships with a few dudes. I think there's a few of those that really generate like serious trust and love. But like, part of it is they pay attention to what goes on around the league enough to know, like, DeMar DeRozan had a really close relationship with Masai Ujiri.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in San Antonio.
Right. Blake Griffin with the Clippers.
Exactly. Kind of, so it's just like, I just don't think that really winds up mattering. And what I wrote in the article was just basically that, like, look, if these guys are going, they're going to go for the same reasons LeBron went. And like, we can be honest about the situation now.
Yeah.
Like, we can be honest about it. We don't have to hide behind what we did over the summer, which is there was a whole lot of conversation about it was Magic and his plan and how he's done this. And just like, you have to know, like, it's Magic and the Lakers, and like, they had just such a good plan. No, LeBron called them and was like, I'm coming. You can figure out whatever. Here's the memo. I'm going on vacation. Figure out what you're going to do. I'll see you in the fall. Like,
literally the next day he was in Europe.
Next day on in Europe. So like, he's out. And like, that's fine. Like, I have a whole thing I'm going to write eventually about how like trying to balance being reasonable with LeBron as a person versus LeBron as a public figure. And like, me as a public figure, I'm like, couldn't you have gone anywhere else? Like, just anywhere that you could have competed. And then on a personal level, I'm just like, didn't want to watch his kids play basketball in LA, and his wife wanted to move there. He's tired of Dan Gilbert's nonsense, and he can handle his. It's a shorter drive to his production meetings. I get it. Doesn't have to Skype in. I get it. Like, that makes sense. But like, we can be clear now that like LeBron was going to go to the Lakers no matter what, and there were signs all summer of that. They said like if he was going to go to LA, and if he was going to LA, he was going to the Lakers because nobody's going to the Clippers. Now we'll see that hell of the summer. But that's what's being tested right now is the Lakers are such a trash fire. Can the Clippers be like, I know that we're the Clippers, but we've got a really good management group. We've got really great facilities. We're going to pay you really well. We're taking care of our players, and we're actually competitive. And like, that's going to be the tension. But I do think that like most players are going to look at it the same way as LeBron. I can go to LA. I can live an LA lifestyle. I can go to all these cool parties and all these cool events with all these cool people. And I get to wear the Lakers, and I get to look over, and there's all the stars sitting courtside, and it's got the lights, and like, this is where Kobe played, and like, they're gonna feel that same sense of aura. And it doesn't matter how, like, Rob Pelinka being in the tunnel doesn't matter, because none of these guys, I think, are rational actors. And somebody challenged me on that. They said, rational for basketball, and what you think is rational is not what they think is rational. And I was like, that's fair. That's fair. In that their personal preferences can definitely drive discussions. But if you do take that route, you have to be very honest. Like, you should at least be cognizant enough to be like, I'm entering a bad situation and I hope it gets better. And I'm willing to make this trade off for the benefit of my personal life. Like, I just want to live really well, make a lot of money playing a game I love. And maybe we can compete if things get right. Because there have been teams that were dysfunctional that competed at a really high level. LeBron's been a part of a lot of them. So like, there's, it's entirely possible that it can wind up working out in their favor.
I want to come back to this. Honestly, we're going to take a quick second here. We're going to come back. I want to come back to the logical aspect of this, because logic to us is not the same thing as logic to the people that we're talking about. So we're going to come back to that here in a bit. It's tough here because I'm trying to, for you and I to talk about this, right? We have to try to have like a baseline of logic that you and I can come to some type of a middle ground on, right? And I think for that's you and I, where you are more cognizant of Lakers exceptionalism or maybe more welcoming of Lakers exceptionalism than most, right? There are other people out there who would analyze this situation and laugh at the very idea of Lakers exceptionalism. I'm frankly one of them in the fan base that I would say, like, as cool as it would be to have Denzel watch me play on a nightly basis, or to have Andy Garcia, Jack Nicholson is like sitting courtside, and all these people are just they become a part of my universe to some extent. Like, I just, it's hard for me to say, okay, that is, it's worth playing in front of those people and it's worth the off-court advantages to give up working for a front office that knows what the hell it's doing, right? So I guess one of the things I want to talk to you here about is the league-wide perception is, like, how far is the gap between the way the Lakers front office is operating and the Clippers front office is operating? Because that seems to be the top competition for somebody like Kawhi Leonard heading into the summer.
I mean, there does seem to be a sense that Ballmer's impressive. That's like the sense I've gotten, is that Ballmer's involved in these meetings, and he's very impressive in that he's a guy that's had a lot of success
that outside. He's generated.
Right. Like Ballmer's done things. Like, Ballmer has built things. Ballmer is an executive, and he talks in that business sense. And in those meetings, when you're talking about opportunities, that can be very effusive. And he surrounded himself at the top level. Like, think about who their front office is made out of. Like, it's high level basketball dudes. They've got Jerry West as like the big catchy name. They've got a strong department of smart people. They've got a lot of people to woo both the players and the agents. And like, that's a big part of this. Like, look, if you're looking to get Kawhi, okay, mm-hmm. Do you need to get Kawhi or do you need to get Dennis?
Yeah.
Like, you need to get Dennis. Like, that's who you need to get. You need to get Uncle Dennis. And that may be one where the Lakers actually have a leg up, because like Magic Johnson Uncle thing. Dennis, like Magic Johnson walks in that room, that's probably going to have an impact.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably going to swing things. And that's not to
and
say
LeBron
that
too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not to say that his uncle isn't savvy or knowledgeable.
Yeah.
That he has, like, he was looking for Kawhi to get out because he wanted him to have a bigger aura. And you're going to have a bigger aura if you play with the Lakers. Like, everything with the Lakers will be amplified. The Clippers have to respond with, you're going to be the guy. You will be the biggest star in the history of an NBA franchise, and one that is remaking itself in terms of its identity. Like, one thing that the Ballmer's done really well is, not only was there the whole Lob City era, which was obviously left over from Sterling, but Ballmer managed to really kind of, he, even as that team was deteriorating, he really built up the concept of, like, we're still building something around it. Like, we have a competitive team, but we're building an infrastructure. And he continued to do that. And, like, I think keeping Doc is a big part of that, right? Doc's going to be, I think, a big part of the conversation as well. Like, Doc being able to, like, let's be real. I love Frank Vogel. I think Frank Vogel is an excellent coach. I am concerned for him currently in the situation that he's entered into. But, like, Doc's going to have way more sway when he walks into a room than Frank Vogel.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to just a quick aside here as it pertains to the Clippers specifically. How were they able to keep Mike Winger and to keep Trent Redden. Like, did Ballmer just walk in and just drop money bags in front of him? Because they passed up on at least the opportunity at some great opportunities.
Sorry, broke up there. Say again.
So with how were they able to keep Mike Winger, and how were they able to keep Trent Redden despite the opportunities that they had in front of them? Like, it was that just Ballmer walking into a room and dropping money bags in front of him and saying, just stay here, we're building something?
That I don't know. That I can't tell you, because like I don't have enough insight on that situation to be able to tell you. What I can say is, like, there is a real strong sense of when you're in these conversations with people around the league and they're like, you know who's doing really well, or they're like, you know who's got a really good thing going, or who's really impressive. Like, you get a sense of, I think a lot of it's just like from trade calls and then like conversations at things like the G League showcase and the draft, which is honestly like limited exposure, right? Like, it could be like, oh, it's just like one exposure.
Get your stuff together for like a 2 week period, and then.
but like when you hear it consistently, like that, and then it's backed up by all the other reporting, which is that's what we've heard. Like, we've just heard like really good things about like what the Clippers have kind of put together. But all that said, I just still think at the end of the day, if you're Kyrie Irving and you're like, you know what, I didn't want to go here. Being a Laker sounds great. I love Kobe. I realize how good I had it with LeBron, and now I get to be with LeBron when he's kind of taking a step back, and I get to be the guy like in LA, in Kobe's building. Like, I think that's really going to appeal to him. I think that's going to be very attractive to him. I think with Jimmy Butler, it's going to be really attractive to be like, you get to be like the guy, like you get to be like the, you get
especially
to be
given the way that the Lakers season went last season, right?
Yeah. I think also part of it though is
bail out LeBron.
Butler's weird in that he wants to be the alpha, but he also wants somebody like that's just as driven as he is. He wants both. And so I think like LeBron affords him the opportunity to be definite, like the co-star that's actually people are like, you know, he might be better. Like, that's, I think, what he wants. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays into it. And then if you look at like all the rest of these free agents, it's going to be the same deal. You know, like if Kemba Walker wants to leave, the Lakers are such an upgrade in aura for him, just in stature. Like his presence in the NBA will be changed overnight. It will go from, you know, who's really good is Kemba Walker, and nobody really talks enough about how good Kemba Walker is, even though he's an all-star, to like, is Kemba Walker a top five point guard in the NBA? Like, he immediately enters in that conversation because he wears yellow and gold, yellow and purple. Like, that's just immediately what happens.
It is a good color combination. I can't lie. I do want to, The last thing I want to touch on here before we move on to like the Lakers and the basketball that we've actually been able to watch over the last couple months, as it pertains to the Lakers, Magic goes on ESPN and I thought the Lakers actually handled it pretty well. I thought the Lakers not clapping back, just saying like, oh, it hurts to hear that stuff from him, and then Genie leaks out like a day later, or a day or two later, that Magic had actually spoken to them. The Lakers basically played the victim, and I thought that was the only intelligent way that they could go about handling the situation. But we still got that report that even before Magic went and said the things that he did about backstabbing, ineptitude, and incompetency, before he said that stuff, LeBron was a little concerned, and then you know, I wouldn't imagine that this stuff helped. My question here is, was that LeBron offering up some plausible deniability if this stuff doesn't actually work out, if the Lakers strike out with him trying really hard? Or, you know, was that a shot across the Lakers' bow? Or again, like, does any of this actually matter? Like, there are three kind of responses and forms of analysis to the situation, and I think it's some, you know, pieces, bits and pieces from each part of it. But I'm trying to figure out like what is the biggest thing to take away from this? Is this LeBron separating himself from the Lakers organization, or is this him like literally telling them, hey, get your stuff together?
I mean, the reports of him like recruiting have come out, right? Yeah. That, like he's started recruiting, and so I think some of this, what's going to be interesting this summer, is this really is going to be the ultimate litmus test for the whole like, or I guess maybe it's not. Like, I was about to say, like, it's going to have to be the ultimate litmus test for, do people want to play with LeBron? But I guess it's not, because if they don't, then his defenders can just be like, no, it's just because the Lakers are messed up. Yeah, look at how messed up the Lakers are. Yeah. But like, if he's who he's supposed to be, like, he's the king, he needs to carry. He needs to close.
Yeah.
He needs to bring him in.
Yeah. I agree. I thought he's handled this offseason really well, too. Like, I think him, basically, he's gone from, he's leaked both things. He's leaked that, hey, this stuff is a mess. Also, I'm working my butt off to do this stuff, right? To recruit, start this recruitment process. So I think he's handled it really well. But, like, again, does how he's handled this, does how the Lakers handled the Magic Johnson tirade, does any of that carry in, leak into conversations that they have with these free agents? And if I believe you, then cool, awesome. The Lakers are great. But you know, I guess the last question that needs to be asked here is, if they get that person, is it still possible that they just screw it up anyway? Because we saw that last year. They got LeBron. They had $30 million in cap space, and they screwed it up anyway.
Yeah, I think that could still happen. That's the thing, is I think they could get the other star, and they could still be like, oh, there's, I mean, part of it is, like, we've seen a lot of teams with multiple stars just not click. Mm-hmm. And Kyrie's probably, like, the exception here, because it's like, you, those two know how to play together. There's no adjustment period there. They're just going to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to do what we did, and only, like, Kyrie's going to play a little bit more. Like, Kyrie's going to have the ball a little bit more, and he's going to play make a little bit more, which would honestly be good. That's what they need. But, like, I really don't know that it matters. And the reason is, I just think, as long as you're able to go in and promise good things for their guy, like, the agent is trying to, the money is going to be the same for most of these guys, no matter what. They're going to have multiple maxes on the table. Mm-hmm. Like, Butler may not. That's the only one that I could think of that may not, because his market really is compromised. There are enough, like, front offices around that are just like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I've just heard from a lot of folks that are like, boy, I don't know if I want that in our locker room, like, mm-hmm. that. And they're like, he's a great player. It's just, things are good. Like, a lot of it is that if you're going after Butler, you're like, ooh, we have a good team, let's get better. But if you're a good team, you're also like, things are good. Yeah. We want to
game of zones. Game of Zones had him hacking teammates up.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound great. Yeah. But I think in most instances, if you're able to guarantee the agent that it'll be a good situation, and that the player is just like, no, I want to play for the Lakers. I want to be a Laker. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the question, right? It's like, if a guy, look, if one of these top free agents is saying, I want to win a championship, then he's probably not going to the Lakers. If that's like, that's my goal number one, that's all I care about in everything. And if his people are behind him in that, and like, we want to make sure that he's in a situation where he can win a championship, not win big, win a championship, then yeah, they're not going to the Lakers. They're going to go team up with somebody in New York or LA. Like, that's what they're going to do.
Well, all right. Can I counter to that is, like, it's not like the Knicks are this picture of stability, right? Like, if KD and Kyrie team up in New York, that's not an automatic championship. I still take the Warriors over that team.
No, I agree. But, like, here's part of it is his. You have to think about it from the player's perspective, yeah, right? And I think a lot of it is this is one I don't know. I don't know what the perception is of LeBron, because this has always been a really complicated subject.
Yeah.
Okay. LeBron was honestly not really well. He wasn't worshipped by the players that much until really 2012, when he won the title and it was like, he's the king. That's when a lot of people started. And part of it was the old guard didn't think much of him. Like, that Paul Pierce still is never going to think much of him.
Yeah.
Like, it's just never, like, he's always going to be like, I beat that dude.
Which tells me that LeBron's doing something right. But yeah.
Right. Exactly. But, like, they're always going to kind of be that resistance, or they're going to have been like Kobe guys that were like, well, I was a Kobe guy, you know, like, and so, like, that plays a part in it. That's changed. There's a lot of guys that respect, like, what the king is now. But I do wonder, if you're looking at the situation, how many players are going to be like, my best chance to win a championship is meeting up with LeBron James, when they have this kind of roster. Now, if it was like, if they were stacked and it was like great players all over, and there may be a player, if you're a Lakers fan listening to this, you know, like, they do have a good team. It was just hurt last year. Yeah. There may really be players that are like, no, I know Brandon Ingram is good. I know Lonzo Ball is good. I don't care what all the numbers say. I don't care what these fake ass analysts say. I don't care what the analytics say. I played against those guys. Those are hoopers.
Yeah.
They're ballers. And I know I can win with those guys. And if you find one of those guys, then I think you can win. Like, Jimmy Butler, I think, is the best candidate there. Right. Like, if Kyrie's coming because Kyrie's just like, this is what I want. Like, mm-hmm. LeBron could have been there or not be there, or it could just be like, he wants to play with LeBron. It's entirely just like an instinctive emotional thing of, this is what I want. I think the guys that are more driven are going to be in different type of situations. But look at the guys that we're really talking about here, right? Like, Kevin Durant's not expected to. Nobody expects him to go.
Yeah, he's going to New York.
Everybody believes that, right? I don't think it's out of the question. I think if LeBron went to him and was really like, I want to be number two, and you get to be number one, and you get to be the best player of the world with me. Like, I think that would be a really attractive offer to KD.
Mm-hmm. I don't think LeBron does that.
Now, it'd be tough, I think, because KD would be like, I'm just leaving a situation where I wasn't the guy.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely, and like, I'd have to do, even if I do this here, it's still going to be yours. Like,
yeah, because like even in Golden State, Steph has done everything he can to kind of like make KD the guy, as evidenced by the last like six games that he's played without him, but it didn't matter.
Yeah. So I think like Kyrie's going to go if Kyrie wants to go. If Jimmy Butler goes, it's because he believes in playing with LeBron, and he would believe like I can win a championship with this roster. Kawhi Leonard would be going look, the Raptors are about to go to the NBA Finals. They're about to literally be the second best team remaining, mm-hmm. right? If you believe in them, they have a chance at winning the title. Could happen. I didn't think Fred VanVleet would hit five threes, and he did. So like these things happen, right?
Yeah.
So like they could win a title. So if Kawhi's leaving, it's clear that Kawhi doesn't care about a championship. His best shot at a championship is clearly Toronto.
Yeah.
So if Kawhi's leaving, he's going for different reasons too. My point here is like the Lakers can stumble into contention, and the question that you were asked on the end about like they could still screw it up, they can. I think a lot of it is though, if you're listening, is all right. If you're listening to this, you probably believe that Brandon Ingram is who he was in January and February, right? The amazing player that shot 50% from the field and was lights out as they were getting their ass kicked and had a terrible plus minus. But like you believe that he's that guy. And it was everybody else's fault.
I don't know. Maybe not this audience specifically, but go ahead.
Yeah, and if you believe that like Lonzo Ball is like a real guy that can make like is just like a difference maker and an all defense candidate, and Kyle Kuzma is a sharp shooter that shot 30% from three.
This like, audience definitely doesn't feel that way,
right? But like, but you can buy into this concept of like, all right, if you put LeBron and Kyrie, or LeBron and Jimmy Butler, or LeBron and Kawhi, or I think even LeBron and Kemba. I think if you put those guys together and you have that much talent and then the other guys are just good, I think you're in a pretty good spot to at least be like, we're going to get to a Western Conference Finals versus a Steph, Clay, Draymond working on their sixth straight finals appearance without KD, with a sliding Draymond, no bench, that's cap strapped, Dre's in a contract year. Like, there's a whole formula here for success. Yeah. So it's like, this can definitely happen, but it can also go down the road of like, if those guys aren't, if the young guys continue to be inconsistent as young players typically are, and they botch the other signings, if they go, cause there's a good chance they go the other direction too,
yeah.
where they put all those playmakers around him and it was a disaster. And we were all like, dude, where's the shooting? If they go full on, we're going to get Kyle Korver and JJ Redick, who's a free agent, by the way, this summer. And we're going to get like all of these supporting shooters. And we're going to do exactly what David Griffin did in Cleveland. That's not going to work either. Cause LeBron's not the defensive player that he used to be. And the other guys aren't enough. And you don't have enough firepower like you did in Cleveland. Cause you don't have Kevin Love. Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's this whole scenario where they put shooters and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we fixed the offense. Oh God, the defense is worse. And now you're in shootouts every single night. And that's really tough in the Western Conference.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're talking about kind of the other teams and where the Lakers figure into this as they currently stand, because that's a perfect segue into the final topic here, how the Lakers would have fared had they got their stuff together and actually squeezed into the playoffs here. So hang tight. We're going to come back and talk about that. One of the more frustrating responses that I've gotten over the course of the last, since the Lakers season ended, or even before that, was the Lakers were the four seed back when they were healthy, right? Because on one hand, I say, well, everything was going about as well as they could, and the Lakers were playing above their head. They were playing really, really hard, especially on defense, and I don't know if that was sustainable, but that's a lot of kind of speculating. That's a lot of prognosticating. There's no like hard line evidence to say that that isn't what the Lakers definitely were. And yet the stuff that those people are pointing to is also a lot of prognosticating, thinking that that could be sustainable.
Thinking that what we saw from those Lakers teams was actually what the Lakers were.
My question is, if the Lakers are somewhere between the four seed and wherever they finish this year, like, how does that team look come playoff time?
Let's roll down the list. So let's say they're the eight seed versus the Warriors. Okay, the Clippers dragged. Well, no, but the Clippers. Look, the Clippers dragged them to six.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the Rockets dragged them to six. The Blazers got swept. The matchup probably says with LeBron, it's probably five. Like five with a hard fought one of the other ones where Laker fans can probably say, if we won that game, it's 2-2 and everything's different.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's probably like the most likely outcome there, because the Warriors will always give you one. They wouldn't actually be that close, but it would be like, you would be able to talk yourself into them being that close.
Yeah.
Like
a long sustained 7-point loss.
Right. The one everyone probably targeted is Denver, because Denver went seven games with San Antonio and San Antonio wasn't good. I don't genuinely think it would play out the same. The Spurs had a really rare combination of making the game ugly and slow. Like the Lakers win game one. They win game one in Denver, no questions asked. They win game one. And they win game three in Staples. But I honestly think it probably plays out the same way that the Spurs series did, where they come out, they lose game one because the Nuggets were just shocked by the moment. The Nuggets respond and take care of business in game two and win comfortably. They lose game three because the first road game is a game in Staples. In game four, they probably respond and eke out a close one with Jokic having a big game. They win game five to get momentum. LeBron doesn't let them lose in game six. And then I think they lose in game seven. Now, you can make the argument because, like, you know, if the Spurs had just shot even reasonably well, just like if the Spurs had any weapons whatsoever, they win that game seven on the road. So maybe they get past them. And then in the second round, it's Blazers, Lakers. And in that situation, like, I don't think the Blazers were better than the Thunder. I don't think the Blazers were better than the Nuggets, and the Blazers beat both of them. So maybe the Blazers lose to the Lakers, who I think the Blazers were definitely better than. Like, LeBron goes nuts. They're able to trap Dame effectively. Nobody else can do anything. The Lakers have the size with JaVale McGee to contest Enes Kanter. And they're able to advance to the Western Conference Finals and get stomped by the Lakers, which we previously discussed. If they're in the six and they face Portland, we just kind of ran over that. Mm-hmm. If they're in the five and they face Houston, then I think probably we know that Houston probably cleans them out in six. That's probably what it takes.
Yeah, I think I'm with you for the most part. The one thing here is playoff Rondo. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So the thing that I can't really come to grips with is we never really knew what the Lakers actually were, right? Like, we knew they're at their best. Their identity was mostly LeBron is in charge of the offense, and then everybody else around him focuses on the defense. That's that when the Lakers were playing their best basketball and they were heading into that Christmas game against the Warriors, that was what looked to be the equation that they were figuring out. But I don't know if that's necessarily something that's all that sustainable come playoff time, because eventually, and we're seeing this kind of with Milwaukee, like those other guys have to hit shots. You know, KCP only started hitting at the end of the year when there were no stakes. Brandon Ingram, same kind of sort of thing, right? The Lakers season was already over, and he started producing like crazy. There are just so many kind of dead roster spots on that team that I don't know how they would have come to grips with that, because eventually, like in these seven-game playoff series, these good coaches and these good teams just kind of hammer at that same nail over and over and over again. And, you know, like Lonzo Ball would have had to hit shots. Brandon Ingram would have had to hit shots. Kyle Kuzma, who was not a good shooter this year, would have had to hit shots. And I don't know how that goes. I just... It's also hard, though, to come to grips with what they were at the beginning of the year. So I don't. There's somewhere in between there. I agree with you for the most part that, like, best case scenario, they push somebody in one series and then it's over.
I gotta bring it up though. I'm sorry. Everyone that talks about the good start, I want Lakers fans to come to a coalescence on what the narrative is, because in the beginning of the year, all the young guys had very bad plus minus numbers. They were getting beat when the kids were on the floor, and they were winning when the veterans were on the court. And by the end of the year, everybody's like, the veterans are trash and the kids are good. And that's fine, but you're going to have to figure out one or the other. Either because when the kids were good, they were losing games, and it was really bad. Like, the kids plus minus was pretty good, and the veterans were terrible, but they were losing games. So it was like, when the kids were good, they couldn't win, and when the veterans were good, they won, but the kids were bad. So you're going to have to come to some sort of coalescence on who the Lakers were and what they actually – like, how that actually plays out. Because, like, the reality is that over a pretty significant – over, like, nearly 2 months sample, when they were good – it was because the veterans were playing great. And either, like, if you want to say that's the team that they could have been, I'm okay with that. Like, all right, like, they weren't, their veterans went through a midseason lull, they got healthy, and they could have pushed at the end like they did at the beginning of the year. All right, I can buy that. Or you can say the kids were good, the veterans were bad. Okay, then the stuff in the beginning of the year, then that was smoke and mirrors. I can't have both. Can't be like, oh, well, we deserved our record even though the kids were bad when we got that record because the kids were good later. That doesn't make any sense.
Here's my response to that. The kids still cared. Even while they weren't good, they still cared. Like, when the vets stopped – like, JaVale McGee literally moped to the point where the Lakers felt like they had to trade Ivica Zubac. And it was stupid that they traded Zubac, but they felt like they had to trade Zubac so that McGee would stop moping. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like, fell into a shell whenever Josh Hart outplayed him. And he would go into that shell for, like, a week. Rajon Rondo was, like, this incredible leader that everybody points to. But, you know, when Lonzo was outplaying him, he was a huge net negative, right? And so, like, yeah, I agree. The actual math, the hard line evidence, which is really all we have to go off of when there's such a chasm between the two realities of, like, when the kids were good and when the veterans were good. But the kids, I don't think – other than, like, a 1 or 2 week period right after the trade deadline – that was the only time that I thought, like, the kids just outright didn't care. But when the veterans were playing well and they were carrying the team, and I'm willing to say that they were carrying the team at that time, the kids were still trying. It's just like when the kids started carrying the team, the veterans just kind of fell back on their heels and said, oh, man, well, here goes my contract year.
But, like, when the kids were trying, the team was bad.
Right, but that's because they were the only team. They were the only part of the team that, like, cared. Like, you're one of the first people to point to, especially on defense, the impact of caring, you know, and the impact of, like, just trying. And yeah, there were stretches there, long stretches when the kids were good, that, like, KCP was just, he would go out there and he knew he had to get up, like, 12 or 13 shots a game just to keep his numbers at a point where, like, where Rich Paul could be able to get him his next contract, and that was all he was out there to do. And the kids, I never felt like, other than that, like I said, that 2 or 3 week period where right after the trade deadline they all were, when Magic was basically calling them babies. Other than that, there was never a period where the kids just went out there to get their own and get off the court. And I think that really matters.
So, like, I just looked it up. And, like, from 12-23, when LeBron got injured, till 12-25, till February 1st. So this was, like, probably a couple of days after the whole trade Anthony Davis had requested a trade, but it hadn't, like, talks with the Lakers hadn't intensified where the offers were coming out and the guys knew they were on the table, right? So in that span of time, Lonzo in 490 minutes had a net rating of minus 1.5. You got Josh Hart, minus 2.5. Kyle Kuzma, minus 5.8. Brandon Ingram, minus 3.9. The guys that had positives were LeBron at 2.9, Rondo at 4.3. I know, but this was, like, I guess that was, like, the last game before he came back. You had Rondo at 4.3. You had Chandler Tyson at 3.3. And Alex Caruso in 20 minutes, 7.0. Always Caruso was good on the floor. Like you had all these guys. Let's see, where's Lance? Yeah, Lance only a minus 0.3, and all of that time that LeBron missed for over a month.
But they were like a hugely negative team. They were awful.
Sure, but the point is like the kids specifically. It wasn't if during that time, and I know that you want to just use these numbers, but my thing is like if the kids were giving good effort, which I think they were, and having a positive impact. And the veterans had quit, then what you should have seen in these numbers, what should reflect in the numbers, should be, okay, the kids had all positive numbers, and the veterans had all negatives. And that's not what happened. And if you want to say, like, that metric's stupid, and I don't believe it, and it's nonsense, and it's crap.
No, that's not me.
Okay, no, but that's fine. Guys will say that, though. Okay. Then we have to go back a step further. We have to go to more simplistic analysis. And if we go there, I got the same thing, which is during that time span, that's when they lost games. Now, you say, because LeBron was out. All right. I agree with you. My thing with LeBron, when I wrote the whole thing on the Lakers at the end of the season, was they should have built a roster that when LeBron went out was like 2 to 3 games under 500.
Yeah.
Not 10.
Yep.
And
that's what they tried to build. That's literally what they were going for.
Right. And so like at the end of it, what you wind up walking away with this is during this time span when the kids got tested, it was the kids that had the worst and the veterans had some of the best. Now, the kids were playing more then, so they were playing against better players. All right, fair enough. That's fair. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is like there's this combination of like, well, they're young. Okay. That's okay too. I'm willing to say like Brandon Ingram. Well, even then, like Brandon Ingram could be a great player in 3 years. Alonzo Ball could be an excellent player in 3 years. All these things, all these guys. I love Josh Hart. I think Josh Hart's gonna be excellent long term. Like all these guys can get there. But if we're talking about how good this year's Lakers team was,
yeah.
I have to deal with what the results were, not what the potential is. And otherwise, it's just you're basically saying, well, if LeBron had been healthy, they would have made the playoffs because the early results that we don't believe in, because the veterans were good then, would have held. And then the playoffs, all of the results we'd seen through the years, which was the kids were negative, would have flipped and they would have been this is why I have a hard time with it.
Yeah.
Is like I get the simplistic conversation of on Christmas Day, they were the fourth best team. LeBron got hurt, they fell to 10th. Like that line is very easy.
Well, LeBron and Lonzo. I think they lost Lonzo three or four games later.
Under no circumstances do I want to have the Lonzo conversation right now. But like, we've got a whole structure, and that narrative I think is very easy. My problem is that when I was watching those games, because I just this is what also drives me crazy: the revisionism. Is I'm like, look, in the first 2 months of the season, what were the big social media moments? Lance made him dance. Whoa. Lance Stephenson's going wild. Look at what Rajon Rondo did. The Rajon Rondo game winner. Like all of these moments were all of these big moments that the veterans had these huge contributions. Wow, Tyson Chandler was great tonight. Like all of these things. And if you want to say like that team could have been good if LeBron had stayed healthy, okay, I'm with you. But I can't get to there's no evidence that the team can win with the kids playing well and then saying that that was what happened. Like this year could be it though. If you add another superstar and with another year on all these guys, that could all work out. Like that's part of my thing is everything that happened this year was also – because I'm looking at this too is the Sixers were so good in the playoffs after being such a choppy nonsense team because they were trying to figure out who they were playing with. Like these guys tried to figure out all year how to play together, and it was really tough, and then everybody got hurt. So with a healthy full season and another superstar, to me that's likely enough to get them into the playoffs. But I think if we're looking at last year – I have a hard time believing that they make a serious run based off of like how I view the entirety of how their season evolved.
Yeah. I agree with you for the most part. The thing about the kids and the veterans, I don't think we'll ever like I don't think you and I will ever really agree on with each other on that just because I thought the veterans were so trash, like especially off the court. I thought they were just utter garbage, like in terms of like their willingness to like actually care when the kids were asked to carry more of a load. I just, you know, based on stuff that they were saying at the time, and then based on their actual, like the way that they carried themselves on the court, it was like, it was tough to watch it, because you saw these kids who, when the veterans were playing well, were going out there and were thrilled to be a part of like a good team. And then when the kids started playing well, you started to see more of the business aspect side into things. And I thought it was kind of sad to watch, but anywho, we could talk about this forever. I've taken up enough of your time. Thank you very much, Matt, for hopping on. Is there anything specific that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Just go read that Lakers piece, because it's very it still keeps the hope of Laker exceptionalism alive, and it maintains the idea that this can all work out, which I think is still definitely possible. Like, I'm at a point now with the Lakers and how bad they are from an optics standpoint, but I'm like, it simply cannot be as bad as it seems, because nothing can be this bad. So like, I literally am like, I'm kind of high on Lakers stock right now, because I think it's got to be better. And hey, that number 4 pick I think matters a lot.
I think so too. We'll see how it turns out. But thank you very much for hopping on, Matt. It's always a lot of fun. And apparently I'm going to be seeing you in Vegas in about a month.
Yeah, I'll be there and it'll be a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure you guys are checking out the podcast on Himalaya. And thank you very much to Untuckit, Hotel 6, and Grip 6 Belts. We'll talk to you guys next week. Get your questions in early. I'm recording because it's Memorial Day. I'm recording that show early Sunday before I go out to the barbecues and stuff. So get those questions in. I'll talk to you on Monday. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you then.